Fresh was...
New Comedy Radio, Part 5, Sabrina interviewing James and Nettleton. Right, so we left it on a tenterhook there.
You did do it, excellent.
Attention, kind of thing. It's one of the things that, I mean, for me, the best double acts of French and Sorn is Nara Kanani. And both, neither of those ever, there's something very gentle about the tension, but it's definitely there. And obviously Jennifer has it with Patsy in Absolutely Fabulous. That is, to me, is a tremendous, but they don't do it on stage and it's not really stand-up. So how do you work on the tension? Where did you find it? How did you, did you sit there and say, what do you hate about each other over the kitchen table for an hour? How did you get it?
I think it was there naturally. I think we had a natural double act, and I think that's why all those years ago we decided it was worth a go. And I think it's taken us years to find it and how to do it on stage.
Yeah, it is funny because I think when we, as Sally said originally, when we first went on stage, it was like we're both together in this. And very often it was like, you get that side, I'll get this side, we're writing them in together. But very much so now in the material that we're doing, there are inbuilt tensions, but it's more that Sally's undermined me, or... we're undermining each other at times, and
I think when I say that what we are really making a real solid attempt at is to actually reproduce something that happened naturally when we're out playing in public, and this happened long before we were a double act. We used to play in public together, in that when you're getting it, when you're in a circle of people, you fall into kind of tales and stories where somebody will start to talk about something or be a certain way, and it's almost like, I think what used to happen, Lynn always is the kind of person who will go into a room, she'll be in there first, she'll start talking first, and she's much more forceful than I am, but I am a real absorber of information, and I'll just take my time and bide my time and bide my time.
And I would end up taking the piss out of Sally about her being lazy or her being a bit stupid at times.
Never out of my dressing gown.
Never out of the dressing gown. And that's how we would play it.
And I would literally sit and wait until Lynn had produced enough
rope
which she was quite easily. Not only could she be hung, she could be sewn open and crocheted with the same piece of rope. And then I would just keep attacking. And then, of course, Lynn, because she never, ever, ever takes... She never listens, and she never takes anything in without batting it back. It just becomes a constant friction. You know, Lynn always thinks she knows best, she knows where she's going, she knows that she's going to lead, she's going to organise it. I swear to God, if you went outside and you had a car, Sabrina, she would tell you how to open the doors, she would tell you where the central locking was, she would probably make certain comments about your driving, and then she would, you know, go, because really what you'd be better off doing is if, you know, because
you've never come.
Exactly. The thing is, here, you see that windscreen? Now, I've had a problem with that before, and what I did best, she will run your life for you. She would run anybody's life for you. What she needed was a good spoiler, and I have endeavoured to pick apart all her OCD tendencies over the years, and I've managed it. I have made her a mess.
Yes. It's true.
By being naughty and mischievous and anarchic.
And how do you, when you started it, do you think you trusted each other enough to say yes and not the things to each other anyway? So that
but it was really weird because it never felt like horrible.
No,
it was always taking the piss. It was never nasty. It's never ever been nasty. And... there's never any underlying tension.
Lynn and I are both very upfront people, and I think I'm one of the most brutally honest people that there are around.
Well, we've got a piece that we do on stage because of something she said to me, which genuinely happened. We were getting changed in a toilet as we do. You know, we've got a disabled toilet,
Jesus Christ, it's like glamour.
So we're getting changed in a toilet somewhere, and I thought, oh God, I've got to lose some weight. I was looking in the mirror, and I was like, look at this dress. I said, I don't think I've ever been this fat.
Oh, you are.
And that's what she said. Now, I said that supportively.
Because to be fair, she was wallowing in the illusion that she'd hit some kind of zenith. I was like, do you know what? I've known you a long time. I've seen you this tonnage before. So I did it.
You're quite slim.
So, you know, but the thing was, I didn't even think about it. She was twittering on, and I just, and then we both fell about laughing.
And I went, oh my God, we've got to put that in. It's got to be in.
But I mean, the thing that developed from there. What's harder to put in is the weird. We are beginning to get it filtered through into the material, and certainly in the longer pieces. But, you know, Lynn's car manner is enough. She'll get into. We'll stop at the petrol station. She'll get in the car. She'll shut the door. We'll drive off, and then she'll go. Oh, where's my cardigan? I haven't got my cardigan. Oh, hang on a minute. Now, where have I left it? Where have I left it? Now, I went into the service station. I put it on the counter. I've put it on the counter. No, I didn't put it on the counter. Where is it? It's not on the counter. I've left it in the toilet. I've left it in the toilet. Oh, no. It wasn't in the toilet. I didn't go to the toilet there. Oh, is it in the back of the car? Oh, no, it's in the back of the car. Do you know I didn't bring the cardigan?
And you're just sit and wait for her to get to that point where I just carry on driving.
No, you see, both men.
If it wasn't me, somebody would have made a double act with her.
But we both.
Yeah,
it's both men.
So what's your thing that you pick out then?
God, she's lazy git. I mean, we shared a flat for years. If she can get out of anything, she will not. If she can get out of cooking, washing up, making tea. She does all this. The cat's so comfy on my knee. I can't possibly get up and go. I can do with a cup of tea, but the cat's on my knee. And oh, she's look at her there. She's so lovely, and I can't do possibly. I'm like, oh God. And I was married for years, and I ran up my husband's arse like there was no tomorrow. And I still do that with blokes. Completely wrongly. I am everybody's ideal frigging wife, because I will run out after them. I will cook. I will do the gardens. I'll do everything. You know, the garage needs building. Don't worry, I'll dig the foundations. Do you know what I mean? That's the kind of person I am, and I can't be doing with a migraine, so I will just do it. And that's where she comes in. And but I mean, I remember John Fothergill once said to us when we were down the Comedy Store, we were chatting. We've played these games for years before we were doing any of this on stage. We played these games for years, and John Fothergill years ago, this was. When Lynn wants to hide your Christmas presents so that you can't find them, does she hide them in the cooker? Because she would just never, you know. The thing is, Lynn is overwhelmed and I am laid back. Together, we meet in the middle. And actually, as I said earlier, less said soon is mended. Actually, the truth, although of course it must never ever get out, is we're both extremely hardworking, and we're both grafters, and we both pull our weight, and nobody takes the piss. But
you're just building up
the
game. The game is
the game
about the what I'd really like to get away with.
Oh God, there is an element of truth. When I was a kid, and they used to do the washing up at home, I'd go to the toilet for hours in the hope that at least I wouldn't have to do the washing, let alone the drying. If I managed to string it out long enough, somebody else would do it for me. But it's funny because we're both very capable of doing, you know, everything. You know, now Sally's got her own place and all of that. But I mean, when we shared a flat, she's very happy when we share a flat. I mean, when you were at university and stuff, you were the one that dealt with the bills at the flat, and she organised it and got everything sorted and did all of that, because she was the more responsible of those that were there. But when you came and shared a flat with me, because if she can get somebody else to do it and they're capable of doing it, she's more than happy to let them do it. And that's the difference. Whereas I probably
don't even think
I like
lines.
No, Lynn likes to be in charge. She likes
being
in control.
In charge. I'm like that.
And I will let anybody anyone I see who can actually do it.
Do you get to the point where somebody cooks your meal, you eat it even though you don't particularly like it, it's just the fact that you can't be
asked. She's over the moon. She's over the moon. She's no bother.
I'm no bother.
She never leaves the house.
Honestly, I'm no bother.
She's somebody goes down to the laundry and all your underwear comes back green, you're fine as long as
they've done it. Bless them.
But you know what? We did have, when we shared it, we had a perfect marriage, actually. We really did, because we really just fit in together very, very easily.
Do you know what? I'm surprised I haven't got a boyfriend. I'm dead easy to live with, actually. I'm really...
But I'm very easy to... I'm very easy to live with.
No, she's a bit more complicated.
See?
But I... Super slow. No, actually, I'm not.
I'm just a bit.
Do you know what? I think I'm a bit too contained. I'm just happy to poddle on.
But it was hilarious because when we lived in the flat, in the house in Darlington, she would come in. You know, I think what's happened is I was quite OCD, very clean, tidy, very organised. Sally, very messy, very, very sloppy when we first met. What's happened is we shared a flat for quite many more years than we should have done, and she messed me up a bit and I tidied her up a bit, so now we're both perfect. So she would come in,
but we suddenly remembered that what made us so different is what we need to bring into the comedy, and so now
that's
actually
what's happened.
Now we've in quite a premeditated way we've really started to dig back into that. So that's
there was already there. So
it's already
really true.
It's true, and just because you grow up and you get on with it, and you but actually you can dig back into the things that really, you know, those little deviant points of going, how can I get out of that? Fed that right back into the act.
Because I had this with my brother, because I was always looking after him, and he got himself a girlfriend who was unbelievably practical and organised, and she was always a bit distant from me. We were at dinner.
It's become a cult.
Really
yes. No, no, I mean, from a purely box office.
What do you mean? And she said, well, whenever anything goes wrong, it's called Cause
You.
And you know, you're absolutely right. And you stopped me to come back and brought that to my attention. I promise I'll never do it again. 2 nights later, 4 o'clock in the morning, I get a phone.
It might be on the crest of the wheel, if you like.
The lights have gone on. I don't know why. And I've literally got my hands on the car keys. As I'm on the phone, I'm thinking, I'll be there in a couple of days going in. Electricity board, and I put the phone down. Yes. And I realised how instinctive it was. I don't think I want to be a judge.
No.
I was just like, I can do it. I'm not doing it. And I thought it was absolutely hilarious. And the girlfriend really liked me after that.
Oh, bless you.
I didn't realise it was just a habit that I was doing. But my brother was pissed off.
It is
habits which I think can be very funny if you're strong enough in character not to mind what you're doing.
Of course. Which they are hilarious. I mean, I have taken people across streets that they didn't want to go across. I swear to God, I've put things off top shelves in people's baskets because they've even glanced up there and I've gone, don't worry, I'll get it for you. And they're going, well, I don't have a cat food. I don't want the cat food. I don't want Playboy. What did petrol stations to go to the loo while still in Lindsay and petrol? And I've kind of gone, what's that? And I can hear her going, you see, you've got this bucket over here. You can't leave that there because that'll be a health and safety problem. I do complain if the toilets aren't right, though. I'm in a big complainer.
She's a big, you know, if you ever go to a restaurant with Lynn and she doesn't like what she's eating, there's none of this British reserve of just eat it, swallow it. There's none of mine, oh, that's a green sort of slug on my plate. I'm glad you've made it, I'll eat it and it'll all be fine. No.
Missus, I want to see the manager.
I want to see the manager. She does. And the thing is, it's like, I actually now know what she's going to be like and kind of go, I've sort of given into it, do you know what I mean? I think, do you know what, she wants to have a good old complaint, that's fine. And I just let it wash over me. But it's watching the reactions of the people around the table as they all start to twitch a little bit. But yeah, no, she loves a bit of,
I won't,
this isn't
not
right.
No, I'm not.
And hello, the thing is, what really makes me laugh is,
you can see where it all comes from.
My favourite thing, no one now. I mean, we're in the 2000s now, aren't we? We're approaching 2010. Goodness knows what we'll call them. There's very few people living. Cooey! Lynn still uses the word cooey. Yeah. I don't know why, but she does. At which point she will have frightened some of the people in the restaurant, and other people will be going, oh, I don't know, is this a documentary? Then she'll have this big smile on her face, hello, sweetheart, hello, like that. Somebody, she'll drag them in, you know, in a kind of lure of niceness, and then she'll go, could you change this glass for me? Because to be honest, can you see this a little bit about Anne? Now, on a when she's got them sucked into her web, that's it, that's when it all starts.
I know. Do you know what? Years ago, I once did a PR. Was when I had a job as a proper job, PR as a PR consultant, and we did an event at the House of Commons. I don't know if you were there at that one. We did an event at the House of Commons. Now, the most important thing to do with these events is always, always ingratiate yourself with the people who do the cloakrooms, the people who are serving the food or serving the wine or whatever, particularly when it's canapes, and they're coming around. Well, there was this one little guy who I found out his name. He had all the sausages on the canapes, and I was like, come on over here, bonny lad, what's your name? Oh, what's your name? Now, he was the smallest, scariest looking little greased down haired bloke, middle aged. Barry was called. I was like, Barry, come here, gorgeous boy, bring them sausages over here. Are we lad? You know what I mean? So, well, we got sausages after sausages after sausages. Plates of sausages came over. Well, everybody was over the moon. End of the night, he comes over. I'm chatting to people, literally sat next to me. Something gets pushed into my hand, which is a little bit of cardboard. And in a blunt crayon was written Barry and his phone number. But you know, I had a chat today with somebody on the tube who was singing away, this lad with these headphones on, this young kid who was, you know, and, you know, I'm sure as we said today, people were going, oh, great, that's two nutters, you know, they're both talking to each other. Well, that's kind of
where the fun comes from. So how do you translate this to go on to stage then? Or how did you start to translate it?
Well, I think...
This is important because we picked the wrong partner.
I think maybe...
And what they'll do is they'll artificially
You start off with what you've got. You start off with what's happening naturally. If I was writing, I would find it a lot easier to have Lynn's voice in my head than my own.
Because mostly my voice is in your head.
Yeah, exactly. So in a strange old way, it kind of... But then that's weird because I can hear her in a way that she can't hear herself sometimes.
Well, that is what I was going to say.
That is weird. Because then
when you double act is when you've got to be honest enough and receptive enough to hear your weirdness. It's like when you hear your own voice in the answer machine, you don't want to pretend that's not your voice.
Yeah.
It's the mechanics. It is your bloody voice. No, you're doing that for each other.
Yeah, but weirdly, all of the stuff that was written, very, very bizarrely, very little of it actually happened live. Most of it was written beforehand, and it's gradually become second nature. And then it's gradually got to the point where it works, and then lots of different stuff that happened, you know, there's lots of stuff that happens at every single gig we compare that is absolutely brand new and comes out, you know, just to do with that room on that particular night. And I think... again, this is something that's happened much more latterly. Just pinning down who you're supposed to be, what you're supposed to represent on stage.
All the time.
All the time.
And that's the hard thing, is being consistent. Particularly with us when we're comparing, because you're not being a character per se, what we're trying to be is, we're actually trying to be part of ourselves, so you're going into these different elements of yourselves and playing different games at different times.
If you can imagine...
As opposed to a simple dynamic that's very two-dimensional.
If you can imagine that... If your character has got to be... sort of the sidekick.
I mean, we went through all of that, didn't we?
We did.
You played really stupid.
Well, no, this is what I'm about to say.
Right. Okay.
If you're in a situation where your role is the sidekick, as in the spoiler and the wheedler and the, you know, which is where I'm at. Now, my role, you can appreciate, changes in relationship to the status that Lynn is on that particular night. And if her status is at a certain level, then I don't have to be that stupid. But if her status is lowered, and she's starting to be, you know, she's a bit relaxed, and she's kind of just having a nice time, and she's being nice and lovely, and I have to be subnormal to actually...
Which she plays well, to be honest.
But
she does it with me, but
you can imagine that comes off, and neither of us are quite satisfied, because we haven't been able to do the kind of material that we really want to do, or get the edge, or the control. So actually... Always, you're trying to go, where do I have to be?
And unfortunately, it really does stem from me as the kind of... You realise it's incredibly difficult.
difficult to be the straighter of the two. I mean, we're both bloody idiots, but to be the straighter, higher status one, to maintain that all the time is so important. It's very difficult to do.
And what happens naturally is if, for you know, because sometimes, you know, if they're a very nice audience, as you know, might be the situation, or maybe they're a nasty audience, and you know, because Lynn is generally somebody who is, you know, kind of friendly and one thing or another. Sometimes if she's going out and she's being very friendly and very lovely, that puts me in a very odd position, and actually I end up being the more acerbic one. So it doesn't matter what happens, somebody has to hold the power. And even if she's supposed to be holding it, if she doesn't have it, I then have to hold it. And then we go into a completely different dynamic, which we get away with, but it's not the strength of what we are both. We're not playing to our strengths, as it were. And that doesn't mean to say that I'm not capable of being the tough guy, as it were. It's just...
And I'm certainly capable of being the fucking idiot.
Exactly. It's just that the way that we've settled upon, and we did start off as well when we first started, I was the straighter one and Lynn was the idiot. But we realised that that's not the game we really play.
And that friend's told us that. They went, oh, that's really odd, because you, when you both go out, she, as friends, outside, you know, Sally always plays the idiot, you always play the higher
thing is,
status. And it was very
strange.
And
it's actually learning that that level of voice that Lynn gets into when she's being slightly pompous and she's sending herself up, but in a way that you wouldn't mess with, is kind of a role she plays when we're playing, when we're not on stage. She gets into that role on stage. I know exactly where I am.
It's easy.
And it's easy. Something that even in the last week we have taken on board is the idea that it's got nothing to do with... If you can just get yourself out of the way and actually start thinking of the reaction that you want your other person on stage to feel, and also how you want the audience to feel, you forget about constructing your character.
Because you get lost in your own...
Yeah.
And that is absolutely it. It's getting yourself out of the way. And just being, and if you concentrate on what you want them to feel, and you want the other person to feel,
because
otherwise you're worrying about.
Because we've done it enough now as well. It's not like we are trying to find these characters. The struggle now is finding them every single time. And it's funny because I'm sure it is part of the path that most comics take, because I remember 5 or 6 years ago talking to people who, you know, now you consider, you know, to be the regular headliners at the Comedy Store or wherever. And their worry was always consistency. Because it's finding it and then going, and now it doesn't matter what the crowd is, it doesn't matter what the room is, that's what I'm going to find every single time.
But we were in Leicester recently, and we ended up having a good chat. It was Raina Hirsch and
Trevor Crook.
Yeah, lovely. And I can't remember who else.
I think it's just that who's left.
Oh, no, but Craig Campbell, he was there chatting, but he'd gone on to another gig. But we were talking afterwards in the dressing room for a good couple of hours about that very thing and how difficult that is, that consistency, and to get into that perfect space as a performer. You know what it is as well, Serena, because you get the zone, and to find that zone every time is incredibly difficult, and the audience can help you with that because they're very accepting the second you get up there, and they're very warm, and that makes it easier to get into. The hard thing is when the dynamic of the room is different.
Well, I can find something as simple as having a sore toe and upset stomach.
Yeah.
Something like, you know, today when my utilities have either blown up and got new water in one house. And suddenly a little part of you is staying with you instead of staying on the stage.
Yeah.
And that little part can be enough for me to go in the zone.
That's exactly it. Yeah, it is.
And
exactly.
And be a bit tired. And that's okay. Sometimes people feel that they take responsibility to it all. And I'm like, it isn't.
I once remember we went to Cardiff. We were doing Cardiff Jonglers, and we got to the big sleep, and it was chucking it down, and we couldn't even drive straight to the venue.
Raining.
We needed to be at the venue for 8:30. By this stage, it's 8:15. We're in a mad rush because there was a problem on the M4. There's a big, massive match,
so we couldn't drive to the venue,
and the rain's coming down, and literally, it was like, we've got to get the luggage in, we've got to get checked in, and then we're going to have to absolutely hightail it to get to the venue in time.
We'd already been in touch with them saying, we're here. So, everybody was late.
So we both, you know, I shove the car into space, you know, we both go in. I'm literally carrying my stuff so that I can then come back out and then I can repark the car in that split, what, minute and a half. I walk outside and the car is being clamped, and there's already a guy under the car. There's no negotiating with him. He's got a baseball bat. Bizarrely, his van that he'd been waiting in had been parked in a hotel car parking space, so the whole thing is really dodgy. It ends up another one of the comics, Dave Johns, bails us out because he's got a pocket full of money because he's done a gig at the Glee the night before.
They wouldn't take a cheque or a card, they wanted cash. We're supposed to be on stage in 10 minutes time.
We're having to borrow money to actually pay this guy to get the clamp off. You know, you can imagine the emotions and the impending disaster like that. You know, you're feeling teary. Yeah, sure. We get to the gig. I swear to God, we got there. Yeah. They were like, okay, well, you've got, you know, 2 minutes, and then we're going to start the music. We take our coats off. We, you know, smooth our hair down. I look at Lynn just before she went off stage. I went, don't bring this up. It's not funny yet. And that's it. It's like, you know, and you know for a fact that there are plenty of comics telling tales on stage about disasters, but blimey, you know, at the time,
it was awful.
Well, four of us, Shazia, who you know, famous non-drinker, Patrick non-drinker, me non-drinker, and a friend of Pat's non-drinker.
Patrick Monaghan?
Yeah.
I didn't know he didn't drink.
Yeah, no drugs, no drinking, no alcohol, no smoke. But anyway, we're going after the comedy calf, and we're going somewhere, and crash into a car, pulls out in front of this, turns up with plainclothes policeman. And it was the funniest, awfulest thing. Shaz is going, I've got a cousin something like the New York Police or something, and I was sitting there thinking, I know I'm supposed to say something, but I think she means the London Police, the Metropolitan Police. So I was going, oh yes, the Metropolitan Police, yes, New Scotland Yard, yes, your fabulous cousin, what's his name? And we were doing that, and these plainclothes police were pretending that it was our fault and it wasn't. And they obviously wanted us to be drinkers, and we weren't drinkers, and anyway, it went on.
Okay.
It was just this weirdest accident that, you know, it's a freak accident. Anyway, the police finally went. We then had to walk to our friends who then organised it, because the car was, you know, just... So as we were walking along, the three of us, the three comics, were going, right, divvying up, who's going to do which bit of material? Who's going to turn this to material on the stage? And I think Shazia got on first, and then Pat, he came in close, separate describing, and I just thought, I'd leave it to two of them. But it was, again, it was like, everything becomes material.
But I mean, But interestingly enough, that night we had a cracking gig, and I think it was the energy, it was the sheer adrenaline that was pumping, and we went up there and just fired off, and we had a superb gig.
Sometimes
because it we were on that, the adrenaline up, sometimes, I mean, you have such a good time. Very often you get in the dressing room and you've got a bunch of lovely people, and we're just all having such a good time, and then the show manager comes, or whoever comes, to tell you the show's starting, and you go, oh yeah, we've got to do it.
But you see, what we don't have, and this is what sometimes you can, we bumped into Lucy Porter, and I think, you know, she was saying, you know, it is that thing. I think for a guy alone it's hard. I think for a woman alone it's really hard. It's the touring around on your own.
It's not the 20 minutes on stage.
No, 20 minutes on stage is not a problem. It's the job is hard.
I was going to say, one of my streams of pouring with rain, go to John Lewis Manchester on the bus, because it was the only way to get there. And they left me at the motorway station. And I was about 2 miles, 2 hours to Manchester, and I was just stranded there, and I thought, what do I do? So I went out, I started hitchhiking, it was illegal, the police stopped, if it's illegal, I said, I know, do something about it. They managed to get one of the National Express coaches to come from the other side of England, so it was an hour and a half later to come and pick me up. So by the time I got to Manchester, I was about 45 minutes late, I was supposed to be 2 hours early, because I wanted to do something else before the gig. And I walked on stage soaking wet, you know, it was like, I'm now working on stage, through to George, and I just like, looked in them all in the eye, and I thought, I'm the only thing I can think of, actually the adventure was much better than standing in front of people, because they all look miserable. So, yeah, I think those sort of things, as a woman,
yes, I do.
Scary,
but I remember talking to Sarah Kendall about it, you know, and then she got threatened one night on stage, and she had to get the bouncers to take her to her car, and she's been there threatened outside of gigs, and it's just fun. But the two of us, and that's what we were talking to Lucy about. So I do envy the fact you've got the two of you, and that is what is lovely about being in a double act. You know, we've got our little routines. I do the flask, and obviously I make the flask. Sally bought me the flask, but I make the flask and the sandwich. And we've got a pillow, and we've got a little...
She pays for the petrol, and I put it in the car. That's Dad's job, isn't it, really? Put the petrol in the car, it's Dad's job. Which, of course, is why I do it.
And then she makes the phone calls.
Because
it's a man's job.
It's a man's job.
But as you always say after a gig, Sally, well, you know, who's driving home, as we both get a pint, who's driving home, and I look at her and she'll go, that's right, you are. Because mother drinks, oh, no, father drinks, mother drives.
You know, it is that...
But you fall into patterns, and like, it's like most people who spend a lot of time together. Everybody's like, oh my God, you must never stop. You fall into natural silences. There is a lot of, if it's an easy, even conversation or an easy, even sort of environment, it becomes... It's very lacking in stress, actually. You know, you get in the car.
Four or five times.
It's cyclical. You get to the point, and it's tears, and it's, you know, I can't do this anymore, and if we can't get this, and we can't.
But that's about the outside. What about between the two?
There is no outside. There is the outside. Is the inside. That's the thing. When you get to those critical points,
it's never anything personal. It's never a personal thing.
Right. So it's got. Divorce, it's actually about the job, not
well, if it was, it would be. It's about the job.
Yeah.
It would never be about. It would never be about the two of us. We would still be friends. It's that kind of relationship.
Yeah. To be honest with you, but you know, at that point, there, it doesn't feel like this is in a nice box and this is in a nice box. You know, you get to the point where you're doing each other's editing, yeah, and the job and every. You know,
it's the whole.
Who has a job like this? Okay, it's mad.
I think there's something massively cathartic about those points. I think it makes you have a good, cool think
very often about as you're moving, really want to do it,
as you're moving on. Very often it's because you're moving on to the next stage. Once you're on that kind of plateau, everything's cool, everything's fine, but then you need to move on again. And it's at that next step, up and on and forward, when it gets awkward.
Everybody gets to a point where something's got to give. And weirdly, what's happened this time is we suddenly find ourselves with a lot of offered input from other people,
which has been brilliant.
Other people are just starting to offer help, and you kind of go, oh God, that hasn't happened for such a long time.
Are we all right to?
We're fine. We don't have no life.
We end part 5, 6, 6.
5. Is this an anthology?
Yeah.
It is.
Writing.